From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday during the world's largest global climate strike. Millions of people from New York City literally to Antarctica marched to raise awareness of the climate crisis. The millions included local youth climate leaders, some of which had climate clubs in their own schools. They participated in community climate activism groups and even attended the UN Day of Peace student observance. And they're back in Rochester now. They're tired, but they're happy to join us today to share their message, one that's echoed by millions of young people across the globe. Many say they are worried for their own futures. They're frustrated, disappointed, and even disgusted by political leaders who have not acted more urgently on the climate crisis. Our discussion this hour ties into reporting by our colleagues at City Newspaper. In tomorrow's issue, you'll see a series of stories about Monday's UN Climate Summit and the ongoing week of climate strikes. Reporter Jeremy Moll spoke with local activists, including some of the student activists you will hear this hour with us, and I will introduce them now. First of all, the coach to the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders is also the head of the Harley School's lower school, and that's Terry Smith, who's back with us. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And also with us in studio, Liam Smith is a senior at Brighton High School, president of the Brighton High School Climate Club, member of the Citizens Climate Lobby, member of the leadership team for the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, and intern with the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Did I miss anything, Liam?
No, thanks for having us.
We got it. Lindsay Cody is a senior at Honey I Falls Lima High School, crew leader of the Rochester chapter of Earth Guardians, member of the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders, and member of the planning team for Metro Justice's Rochester for Energy Democracy campaign. Is that correct?
That's correct. Nice to be
Welcome.
Here.
Welcome. Thanks for being here. And Radesh Singh goes to school at Brighton. Radesh is a senior at Brighton, board secretary for the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, co-founder of the Brighton High School Climate Club, and member of the leadership team for the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having us.
That was fun because Radesh has been on the program before and I control him a little bit. But honestly, Terry, you know, I'm thinking about these intros and these long titles and these students who are doing all this work. And I'm thinking about somebody who wrote on social media yesterday about Greta Thunberg and said, "She makes me so uncomfortable because I have to look at my own life and say, is there anything that I am as passionate about as she is about this issue?" Mm-hmm. And I sort of think that's what the students in the room make me think. What do you think?
Well, I would say that, and almost everybody who attended the march, I would say, down in New York City at the UN Day of Peace student observance, just listening to the student projects, people from Kosovo, people from all over the world who have this, well, it's their future, it's their survival, basically. And it is, it makes you look at your own, what did I do in high school? I was in the band, right?
Yeah. So,
which was great.
I was in show choir.
I know you were.
I wore green sequin vests.
Yes, and yeah, it's made fancy. You the person you are now.
Well,
but I do think that there's a bit more urgency, and I think there's definitely much more of a public and social media platform for this. You know, it's the right time. And I was thinking about Greta and our students here, and if everybody who has this spark in them is a catalyzing agent wherever they are, boom, man, things are going to happen, and these guys are making it happen. It's impressive.
And let me say, for all the show choir lovers and people in it now, don't at me. I loved show choir, and I still do. It's a matter of looking around saying, can we do all of these things while still working so diligently on the issues at hand? And listeners, if you've got varying, you know, sort of takes on what you've seen in the last week, you know, we want your feedback this hour. If you've got questions for what the students want, they'll be specific. They'll tell you. We'll talk about that this hour. I want to tell you a little bit about the schedule as I understand it, and I would love for you all to kind of tell me what you experienced, and we'll kind of go from there. Mm-hmm. You all attended the climate strike march and rally on Friday afternoon in New York City at Battery Park, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You attended the third annual Climate Solution Summit on Saturday at SUNY New Paltz.
Correct.
Yeah?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Terry, you were saying there were more than 300 participants, about half were students there, right?
Correct. Yeah, we started the first Climate Solutions Summit was here in 2017 in Rochester.
Okay. Liam and Lindsay attended the UN Day of Peace student observance on Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, Friday.
Friday morning.
On Friday? Okay. Radesh, you attended the United Nations Association Youth Activism Training.
That is correct, yep.
It has been a busy few days, and I just want to kind of go around the table and have you all characterize what you experienced and how, you know, sort of, I usually don't like this question because I find it so sort of kind of nebulous and not really meaningful, but I do want to ask how you're feeling about this moment and what it portends for what comes next here. I'll start with you, Radesh.
Great. Well, just going to New York and being a part of that energy at the Global Climate Strike in Battery Park, being a part of over 250,000 concerned citizens of all ages, young and old, it was, quite frankly, not to sound cliche, but it was inspiring. It was motivating. It really touched me in a way that I haven't felt in a long time being as a climate activist, a youth climate activist. And it really inspired me to continue fighting the good fight right here in the Rochester area, which is why I'm really looking forward to our own climate strike right here this Friday.
So. Okay. Lindsay?
Yeah, I would really agree on that. It was really empowering to see all these people. You know, it's like a tangible impact that we're making, but we really need to keep in mind, like, as great as rallies and strikes are, we do need to see political action, which we kind of got by going to the UN Peace Day, which was a great experience.
Okay, Liam?
I guess I would differ a little bit. I'd say I found it simultaneously inspiring and depressing. I thought it was inspiring to see all the young people concerned and passionate for our future, working their butts off to make sure that we ensure that we have a viable future. At the same time, I found it depressing. At the UN International Day of Peace Student Observance, we got to see some world leaders come and speak, including the Secretary General and one of the Undersecretary Generals. And I had the opportunity to actually speak with one of the Undersecretary Generals, Melissa Ruth Fleming, afterwards. And my conversation with her, I found very, very disappointing. I asked her, look, you've been having these international climate talks for 30 years, right? And with every consecutive talk, nothing happens. Global emissions continue to rise. No one's held accountable for their actions. How do we ensure that, how do I know that you're taking me seriously and that we're actually going to do something about climate change? And you know what she said? Good question. So.
Not inspiring.
Not inspiring, but honest. And so, taking the state of things, it's motivating me to come back here and work even harder to make our voices heard and make sure that we hold politicians accountable, because there's a lot to change and it's hard to tell how much it's going to take to cause the change we need.
I want to listen, if we could, and I know a lot of our listeners have heard it, but we're going to listen to a little bit of Greta Thunberg, and then what I want to do is I want to talk about the moment of anxiety and even anger that some students have over the climate crisis internationally here. Let's listen to 16-year-old Greta Thunberg first.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering, people are dying, entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe.
It's Greta Thunberg, and so there's a few things I want to hit here. First of all, my view is that even though she's 16, like the students from Parkland who have led calls for change, she is talking about substantive stuff. I don't think she is above criticism for her ideas. I have no patience for the ridiculously juvenile personal attacks that people have lobbed at her, people who don't like her message. on social media, and it shows this massive collective mirror about how people need to grow up. You do not have to agree with her. And you can, I think, engage on the merits here. That's fine. But my goodness, some of the personal vitriol is so ugly. It is embarrassing. But let's talk about the merits here. She sounds angry. Now, commentator Bridget Phetasy said that she thinks that we have reached a point where it is almost criminal that we have given our children around the world collective anxiety about the future to this point, that it is over the top and that it is tantamount to child abuse when she heard that. That's what Bridget Phetasy said. So she said, I feel bad for this girl. I want a better world too, but nobody should feel that much anxiety. And if we're doing this to our kids, we've gone too far. Terry, what would you say to that, to people like Bridget?
Gone too far. I think it's true. I think the reality, the day-to-day reality of what we have around the corner for our future, if nothing changes, even if a lot changes, we still have that reality around our corner. It certainly sets priorities differently for people. You know, I look at you, you have kids, I've got kids. We think, you know, how are we, if we truly let this sink in, and I think it is for our students, is that this is to the core of their being. This is their future. If, why are we not spending 24/7 working on this? Is there a more important topic? I mean, yes, there's family, yes, there's community, yes, there's work and all of that. And that all is predicated on a future, right? And I think the idea of the uncertainty, the insecurity of the future is plaguing our students. And so you either find people who work very hard, like the three in front of me, the seven, you know, who went down to New York City with us, passionately working on this, and then also having to be on their soccer and gymnastics teams, wanting to do that, wanting to get into college, wanting to be able to go to dances and all the other things that they do. And it's something that I think gets inside them and can either fester, or you have to work with it, or you have to have the guilt of not paying attention to it, right? And I think many of our students, it's too daunting, and I think it's too big of a topic for them to be able to grapple with, because if you keep trying to do something and pressing up against a machine that doesn't let you do what you want to do, we have all the energy, we have all the passion here in this room and around the world for firing the engine of change, but nobody's giving us the keys to the car, nobody's putting us in gear, and nobody's letting them do it. So there's all this intent and there's no action, right? And I think that, more than anything, is the grand frustration and plague on this generation.
Well, here's what her actual tweet said, Liam. She says, adults, please stop projecting your fears and confusion on the kids. It's sick. What would you say to that, Liam? Do you feel like people's fears and confusion have been projected onto you that have caused anxiety in you about the future?
No, I think the facts have caused me to be anxious about my future. I mean, Greta Thunberg is speaking about this, and she's a student, and I find her remarks very real and very distressing. And I mean, that's not an adult throwing that on me. That's Greta Thunberg. So yes, I think it's distressing, but I don't know that it's the media's fault that it's distressing. I think it's the reality of the science that is distressing.
Okay. Radesh?
Yeah. Obviously this issue to a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, it may seem overwhelming. It may seem daunting that I'm just one individual in a planet of over 7 billion people. How can I make an impact? But the thing that, as Liam said, the thing that is distressing is not only the science, but the utter inaction on the mm-hmm. issue of climate change and the climate crisis, and how long we've known about this issue, and how long inaction has been the norm of society, regardless of what nation you're a part of. So for me, it's the inaction in addition to the science that's the most distressing part for me.
Okay, Lindsay?
Yeah, the media is definitely not responsible for creating premature distress over this. I would credit that to the facts, credit it to the science. It's not, you know, a liberal issue. It's not a conservative issue. It's a bipartisan thing. It's an existential crisis that we're dealing with. So that really is what's concerning all of us. It's the fact that our existence and our society that we know today is threatened by climate change.
I don't see a room full or even marches filled with kids and young adults who are poorly adjusted or consumed by anxiety, to be fair. And even in the anger in Greta's voice there, I don't see someone who's out of control or unable to cope. I see someone who is trying to hold adults accountable for actions. So that's where I would disagree with those who are sort of, and I almost think it's kind of this posturing that, well, we can't, it's not this bad, guys. Come on. Like, let's not let the kids get this scared for the future. Well, our kids are going to be around on this planet longer than we are, and now think about their kids. But listeners, if you want to call the program, we're about to talk about exactly what our guests want to see next from us and from government. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. Lindsay, what's on the menu first? What when you think, I cannot believe X hasn't happened, or here's something that government leaders could do, what do you want to see first? What's on the list?
I think that the first issue that we need to address is how climate is affecting people of minorities and indigenous communities and really frontline communities. Simultaneously, we should be working on, you know, mitigating the effects of climate change and decreasing our fossil fuel usage. But while that's getting done, we really do need to focus on how to keep the most vulnerable communities from feeling these impacts so much more than we in, you know, white upper class America would feel.
Okay. Radesh?
I think that every level of government, regardless of if they're state, local, municipal, school board, or even federal, every level of government ought to have step-by-step actions in a plan to address how they can reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and reduce their carbon footprint in order to achieve carbon neutrality. As this issue affects us all, regardless of which part of the country you're from, climate change affects us all, and we all have an impact in causing climate change. So for me personally, I think that although you might not be able to reach those ambitious goals, at least setting them and start taking the first steps to reaching those goals is a must for every level of government.
Okay, Liam?
I would agree with what they both said. I'd like to say that what Radesh said, that every level of government needs to do more right now, that is the theme of the climate strike we have after school on Friday, starting at City Hall at 3:30. So I think it's very important that every level of government acts. But I also think that the most important thing we should do is what will have the most impact. So I think that the federal government really needs to take a leadership position on this issue, because they have a lot more power in terms of regulating the economy, increasing the price of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, and creating regulations to reduce other pollutants. So my first item on the chopping block would be subsidies for fossil fuel emissions, or subsidies for oil and gas. And so I think those need to end, because there's no reason you should be giving money to an industry that's poisoning our future. And then after that, I think we need some market regulations to make greenhouse gas emissions less profitable and renewable energy more cost efficient.
Okay. Terry, does that sound good to you? What do you think?
Yeah, and they're the people to call for it. We were talking beforehand about how it does have to be systems. It does have to be humanity. It has to be unity. There has to be a selfless approach to it, because I feel as soon as, you know, even if you got world leaders together, even whatever happened on Monday at the UN climate summit, even if all of those countries agreed to do something, they're still hedging their bets. They're still looking to see, well, okay, but if you do that, then, or if I do that, if I go out first and you guys rescind on what you say you were going to do, I just feel like there has to be a shift in thinking, in just sort of the greater good of humanity is better than individual gain. It's always environment or money. And I think we're down to a position where that's the, we're in the state. I mean, I was talking to Lindsay earlier about, my father, he's a biology professor. He's like, back in the 60s, we knew the science, and it was very clear. And by then, or back then, the scientists all basically didn't have a collective voice, or at least a platform to raise concern as is now. And that was what the scientists said. They said, look, it's going to come down to either the environment or money. And that's exactly where we are now. And so I think you have to, in some way, however, whether through incentives or some brilliant thinking and clear explanation of this is what we're all doing and buying in together, and that there's a pact or there's accountability or something where everybody is investing in this, maybe not equally, but with the same commitment to it, that something has to happen that way.
Let me read a comment from Alex, who says, interesting to note the absolute terms that some of the people on your panel are using, that no one has done anything or absolute inaction has been taken. Perhaps the actions taken aren't everything that they want, but the idea that nothing has been done is myopic. All right, Radesh, we'll start with you on that. Nothing has been done.
Well, obviously, things have been done, especially, for example, the New York State Assembly and Senate, they passed the CLCPA, or the Community Leadership and Climate Protection Act, and they set some ambitious goals in achieving a 100% renewable grid by 2035, I believe, and going 80% reduction by 2040, around that. But obviously, what I mean by inaction, I mean by we've been, climate activists and environmentalists have been saying for the past decades that we need systematic change at all levels of government and within our society in order to truly address the climate crisis. Yet, we've been trying to apply all these Band-Aids to this huge mess of a problem. And Band-Aid solutions, they might work for maybe 5 years, for maybe 10 years. But if you're like having internal bleeding, one Band-Aid or two Band-Aids is not going to help solve the problem. We need a systemic change in our society in order to address this climate crisis.
I mean, it's like if the doctor told you, Radesh, your mother, to survive, needs to have a cake. You have to bake her a cake. And you start by saying, well, I've done nothing. And the doctor says, well, that's what you need to do. And the next day you come back and you said, well, I baked her a pie. And the doctor said, that's nice. A pie is not a cake. And you go, well, it's something. And you go, okay. We need a cake. And you come back the next day and you said, I got some broccoli at the store. And the doctor says, I said you need a cake. You may do those things, but the outcome is eventually going to be the same. This is the difference here. We're not arguing over the kinds of policy that people might like about taxation, healthcare policy, those kinds of things. Science is giving us sort of a marker. And I think that's why the students feel like nothing has been done, because it's like you either do it or you do not. Now, that doesn't mean that each step doesn't matter. Every tenth of a degree matters, as far as I know from the science, and that will matter.
Yep.
However, it's the idea of, sort of breaking your arm to pat yourself on the back for minimalist steps when it requires something more bold. You got to bake the cake. That pie ain't good enough. Radesh, I don't know what kind of baker you are, but get going. At least that's what it strikes me as. Is that fair, Lindsay? How do you view this? Because you have some adults listening saying, it sounds like you're discounting all the things that have been happening, and there are things that have been happening.
Yeah, there definitely are things that have been happening, but the impacts of what's been done is almost as if nothing's been happening, because we need to see a big change, and we need to see it soon, for any of our work to have any impact that's, going to preserve our future.
Or maybe the easier analysis, Liam, is the cliff. You're driving the car towards the cliff at 60 miles an hour. And like, well, you're going to have to stop the car or it goes over the cliff. And you go, well, good news. I slowed it down to 40. Well, you get a little bit more, and then maybe you slow it down to 20. If you're still moving the car, it goes off the cliff eventually. And you don't congratulate yourself for doing anything other than stopping it. That's kind of, so that's why I think students like Greta, students like the people in this room, the people who've been marching around the world, are frustrated with adults, because adults are slowing the car little by little that's still headed for a cliff that scientists tell us is there. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, and I would also say that I think you have to evaluate each level of government individually, right? So the city of Rochester has a climate action plan. which is pretty good for when it was made. It doesn't align with the most recent CLCPA targets, but I think they're in the process of evaluating that. So I'd say there, that's the thing that the good that has been done. If we go to the county level, they've done nothing. I mean, we've been campaigning for just a non-binding climate action plan advisory board for the past year. We still don't have anything through. So that's a continued point of pressure that we're putting on the county.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair to say that the county's done essentially nothing. I mean, they'll point to a few things they've done, like some LEED certified buildings and some solar fields. But what they've done has been very minimal. If you go to the state level, they have the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act,
mm-hmm.
which does establish some goals. But what they establish are just goals and a process for creating a plan to achieve those goals. So in New York State, they have 2 years. Well, they have till the end of this year to create a climate action council, which will have 2 years to create a plan, a preliminary plan, and then another year to receive feedback and revise the plan. So,
which is a lot of waiting if you're counting.
So,
so goals are not results.
Goals are by no means results.
I mean, I got a goal of being 2% body fat and just jacked. And guess what I'm doing today? I am not going to the gym. I'm eating radicchio pie. So,
nice.
So I take the point about goals, too, that goals are important, but you're still not seeing actual action.
Exactly. And I think that's important to note for in a national level, too, because the Paris Climate Accords, I mean, the other ones, too, but the Paris Climate Accords established the goal of preventing 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming globally. But it's a non-binding resolution that, countries won't really suffer any consequences if they don't reduce their emissions.
Yeah, so, all right, so there you go, listeners. There's sort of the broad outlines of why students are frustrated, why there is some optimism, but frankly some pessimism about what's actually happening. Jane in Rochester wants to talk a little bit about history. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, I very much agree with the person that reminded us that there are people more vulnerable than others, and not to forget them and not to have the sacrifices fall heavily on the poor and the disabled and the elderly. So I very much agree with that. I was thinking about, I'm from the boomer generation, and my memories of that as far as energizing awareness of things when I was very, very young, but was the Daisy commercial. And that's why they hated it so, because it really got to people. If you remember, I know you do remember that. It's been in various sources that you could have sent. But it just, the little girl counting back to the nuclear explosion. And so, and at the same time, though, for propaganda purposes, it was opposite of the duck and cover. Like, just duck and cover, and it will all be okay. So we had the propaganda, and then we had the real world with the little girl. And it was just wonderful. So I see Greta as being a little bit of the Daisy commercial, and there are going to be a lot of people that don't like her. And that just, I think she's accepted that that goes with the turf. But as for what we could do, I'd like us to get really more serious about no more fracking. No more fracking. And to get really energized with other power sources, solar panels and so forth. I'd really like to get that. And I'd also like to read in the paper or places of things that we could do out here. I don't know what to do. I have some things that are somewhat small. I'd like to do larger things, but I know every little bit helps. But anyway, the Daisy commercial, and don't forget our seniors. Thank you. Mm.
Thank you, Jane.
Yeah.
Some thoughts from the panel there?
I guess I'm going to speak in first while you guys are digesting it. The idea that it's just students who are frustrated, I think if you polled, well, I'm not sure, but my sense is that there are adults who are frustrated with inaction in the whole situation. It's, in fact, the events that we went to in New York City had a very good range of ages, but I would say that that as much as the youth have been activated, people probably 60 and up were the other segment of the population that we saw, and they were on fire. They were going, and they were ready to, you know, we've got the, you know, we've got the grannies here in town who come and protest for everything, and you know, with the best intentions and all of that. But I think that it's wonderful. I loved what Jane had to say, and it, and every little bit helps, and all of that, and getting the word out. And I think it speaks to the fact that we need to keep sending out the message, but that it's not just the youth. I mean, I think the youth are the ones who are mobilizing now, but I think it's also you guys, and I'm looking around the room at the youth, have really inspired and activated other age groups in our areas and across the nation.
As we go to our early break of the hour, Kevin writes to say, adults have been slowing the car, Evan. Global emissions have been steadily increasing despite the meager efforts to cut it back. He's saying, the scientists have given us the information about the cliff, and we're actually speeding the car up, knowing the cliff is there, while congratulating ourselves all the while. So that's from Kevin, and I'm going to read an email when we come back from break from Gene with a little bit of a historical note as well. Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program, connections@WXXI.org. You just heard Terry Smith, coach to the Rochester Youth Climate Leaders and head of the Harley School's Lower School. Radesh Singh, Lindsay Cody, Liam Smith, they're all seniors at local high schools, and they have participated in many of the events from New York City to other locations in recent days, and they are very active in different groups in our community working on climate action. Let's take that break, and we'll come back with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. Recently on the show, some labor workers told us that they don't trust President Trump, but they might commit to voting for him again if the president commits to more tariffs. Are tariffs the answer? We talk about tariffs, the reality, the economic effects, and the possible impact on the election Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and a note on analogies because I love them. The cake and pie analogy is mine. I'm pretty sure it was Paul Hawkins who did the car on the cliff, and we go to that one a lot because it's pretty illustrative of the point, but it wasn't mine, and I'm a big fan of crediting work where it's due, and I think that is Hawkins, though somebody will probably correct me on that. I want to read an email from Gene, who writes to us from Trumansburg, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio. And Gene says the following: many years ago, I am now 78, I looked at the future and the possibility of atomic war and said to myself, how can I bring children into a world like this? I read about a population bomb and felt we were all using too much of the limited resources on this one planet that we know. I have tried by not having children, by always having a car that can get more than 30 miles per gallon, by hoping to recycle and finding myself virtually unable to throw away anything. There is no away. But I am just one person. I am in a community that mostly agrees with me, but as the local slogan goes, surrounded by reality. I don't have an answer. I myself will soon leave this planet, but we need to look at the whole picture. It is ecology, the care and study of our home, our only home. I hope the kids can see this planet in the same way. They need to learn to vote, to support equality, total equality, to use less, and perhaps expect less. It is not bad to have less. Our time is limited, and we need to savor every moment. The planet will go on. We might not. Mm-hmm. That's from Gene in Trumansburg. some snaps for you, Gene, there. Liam, what do you make of that?
Absolutely right on. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I don't have much else to say to that. Yeah.
Well, so let me ask you and all three students in the room this question, then. Because really, sometimes we talk vaguely, and I wanted to be specific, and I think this matters more than ever going forward. What we are talking about is a world in which when I leave work today, there's no gas stations. There's not a gas station at the corner every four blocks. There are different ways to get around. Mm-hmm. And we know that the technology exists that is possible, and there are different options for that. But that's the world. We're talking about, for starters, gas stations on most corners aren't there anymore. We are not pulling fossil fuel out of the ground. We are not burning it in our vehicles. And maybe we have different standards of living at home. I understand that's controversial, and I understand there's some who argue against that. But I think that's some of what Gene is saying. Less doesn't mean bad. Less doesn't mean mm-hmm. that you're not going to have a good quality of life. What's let me ask all three of you. What are your expectations for the kinds of consumption life you expect to have realistically? Lindsay.
I mean, realistically, looking forward, we are going to have to drastically minimize our consumption as a society. We are a consumer culture, and that's just going to have to be one of the things that changes if we want to have a livable future. We have an incredible opportunity right now to completely rework our society. You know, there are a lot of things wrong with it, but if we want to adequately combat climate change, a lot of things are going to have to change, and we need to start viewing that as more of an opportunity and not a burden that we have.
But there are decades of work in our society to teach kids to work hard, become adults, be contributing society members, and they can have whatever they want in life. They can have a massive house. They can have several cars in the garage. You okay with giving up a dream for those kinds of things?
I am completely okay with that.
Maybe you never had that dream.
Yeah, I may be the minority on that, but yeah, it's going to have to be a big culture shift to start expecting different things of your future and not be working towards the, you know, three-car lifestyle, because that's destructive.
And before I turn to your colleagues here, for a moment, forget people like Radesh and Liam and think about everyone you go to school with. Do you think the general population of students you go to school with is okay with that kind of a change?
Honestly, I don't, but they're going to have to be, because they have to start viewing this as an issue that threatens their existence.
I appreciate the honesty. So what's it going to take to get more of your fellow students to that acceptance?
I think right now people are seeing it as, you know, youth climate activists, we're just people who really like the earth, and they're not connecting it back to the fact that this is going to affect every aspect of life. And I think once people start seeing that this plays into the economy and this plays into more than just, you know, trees outside, then they'll start caring and, you know, start wanting to act more.
Okay. Radesh.
Yeah, just wanted to echo that. Like, sometimes you might label climate activists or youth, especially youth climate activists, as just tree huggers that just like to frolic around the prairies following, trying to catch butterflies.
I never use the word frolic, but
But in reality, climate change is fundamentally, it has an economic component. It has a social component. It has a cultural component. It has a national security component. It has a refugee component. Because climate change is such an intersectional issue, and it affects all issues that our worlds face, that to not be a climate activist is to basically be sticking your head in the ground and just basically muting the entire world out. Because if we don't deal with this crisis, all the other issues that we see, whether that be violence, famine, hunger, world peace, they're going to just get exponentially worse. So addressing this is so pivotal and so fundamental for society to move forward if we want to actually have a future, that it kind of boggles my mind when people say, oh, this is not a real big issue. This is just some bunch of tree huggers that want to go catch some butterflies. So,
Liam, you were direct earlier this hour about your combination of optimism and pessimism. Gene is talking about creating a world in which culturally, or who knows, through other means, but we have an acceptance that abundance means something different than maybe we've been taught to think in the last 50 years. Do you think your fellow students, and again, I'm not talking about just the ones in this room, believe that and accept that?
I think some of them do. I also think it's a very complicated issue when you talk about changing material wealth or material expectations. I think it's a tough line to draw between, you know, restricting freedom of choice and protecting the environment, or it can be sometimes. So, for instance, eating meat, especially beef, is very, very bad for the environment, because cows and other animals release methane into the atmosphere, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. And so when we're factory farming these animals, we just multiply the effect of that global warming. And so that's one example where it's tricky, because you can't just tell everyone you can't eat meat. But at the same time, we need like a cultural shift away from eating meat at every meal and eating a lot of meat at every meal. So I think you need to strike a balance here between, you know, government regulation and consumer choice. And I think that can be done through carefully choosing what are you subsidizing and what are you not subsidizing. And so that's something I think our political leaders need to think very carefully about, is how do we encourage sustainable growth without restricting freedom of choice?
Andy writes to us on Twitter to say, I'm all for an aggressive push toward climate sustainability. If I need to give up meat to stop Amazon deforestation, so be it. If I need to buy an EV to reduce emissions, fine. Things are bad enough now. I want a world in which my children can thrive, not just live. So Andy is not a student in his teens, and he's saying, I'll give it up. That's an interesting point, too, because I've been asking the students here, do you think, you know, your colleagues in school are feeling like they can live in a future without that? A lot of this is going to be adults who have had decisions to make about what we are used to and what our expectations for a standard of living are. Are you confident that adults are going to get their heads around that, Liam? Be blunt, man.
No.
Oh.
Some, yes. So I'm very grateful for that person.
Enough?
Not yet. Yet. Okay. So I think we definitely need a shift of the way we think about our lifestyle.
So far, like, Liam is like the dark but realistic one, and Radesh is like, I'm going to hit everybody with the hammer of sunlight. And it's going to happen
well
because it has to.
Yeah, we work pretty well together. I think we balance each other out pretty well.
By the way,
if
you want to put that on a business card, which you should probably not print because they're probably not great for the environment.
Yeah.
But in case you ever have a slogan, hammer of sunlight.
All right, I'm writing that down right
okay,
now.
There you go, the hammer of sunlight. But do you trust adults to make changes that you think are whatever? And again, I'm not saying like, hey, kids, do you think adults should give up all of their cars tomorrow and you know, cut all of the square footage of their houses? But I'm talking about an incremental but significant change in what people can expect to have for themselves, whether it's size of the homes they live in, how mm-hmm. we power those homes, how we get around what we own.
Uh-huh.
Do you trust adults to accept that change?
Obviously, that's kind of a tough question, but I've always been an optimist. I've always been a big believer in humanity and believing that we can do it. So, you know what? I'm gonna say yes, that I believe that eventually adults will be able to get around. Because the thing is that the economic incentive to reduce consumption in terms of an individual consumer standpoint is there. It doesn't make sense to have four or five cars when you can just make do with one or two. It doesn't make sense to have beef every day for three times a day, when you know that the WHO in 2014 released a study showing that red meats are potentially carcinogenic. It doesn't make sense for your health. It doesn't make sense for your well-being. So when people start to realize the impact that their actions have both on themselves and their children and those around them, eventually I do firmly believe that we'll be able to make that societal change for the better.
Well, here's Scott Lindsay asking, how do we address the specific actions necessary to changing cultures in such a way that living in the balance with our environment is not seen as coming from privileged people demanding radical lifestyle change, but is welcomed as what is normal for everyone? I think Radesh is touching on there a little bit, talking as best you can about why certain changes would actually be good for you. But it's a cultural change. I mean, you said it. Maybe mm-hmm. right now most of your fellow students would not be
yeah.
down with a lot of what you think might be necessary. Culturally, shouting it from the rooftops, I don't know if that's good enough. What's going to work here?
I think what's key in getting a societal change to the magnitude that we need it to be is education. We need to make sure the whole population is educated on all the impacts, no matter how tangentially related they are, of what their actions are causing. You know, like Liam said, eating beef, it's, you know, supporting the whole industrial agriculture system. It's not just your dinner. You have to see it as more than just, you know, one thing. You have to see all the impacts that it can have. And I think you can really get to that place through education, and whether that's implementing it in schools or having more education just for the general public, less biased news. You know, it's got to come in such a way that everyone can have equal access to education, and then really make sure that the general population knows what the impacts of their actions will be on the climate.
Well, you're all active in your own school communities, right? And you're probably proud to be active in your school communities. Let me start with Lindsay on this. Have you ever had fellow students come up to you and say, this is all BS. Yeah, I can't believe you're falling for this or this. I mean, have you had students push back or adults push back? Have you had any kind of pushback personally?
I have had pushback from, you know, people who are self-professedly apathetic about the climate movement and climate change.
That's an interesting word, apathetic. So they're not denying, they're just apathetic.
Yeah, I don't really come face-to-face with climate deniers frequently. But
so mostly it's like a nihilist or an apathy, mm-hmm. like nothing we do will matter.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's very interesting, if that's true on a widespread level, that we're seeing less denial in, you know, sort of school settings and in youth settings, but still apathy mm-hmm. or nihilism.
At least in my community, in my sphere of influence, I would say that's
so what's,
true. Yeah.
So what's something that someone might have said to you that kind of stands out?
Well, just the other day I was talking to someone who, you know, had this perspective on it doesn't really matter what we do because I'm not going to be around to see the worst of it, which was an interesting Ooh. Perspective because she most likely will be around to see the worst of it.
Well, but even if they're not, yeah. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. Okay.
And again, that's not really factoring in the impacts that her actions are going to have on the economy and on racial issues and on cultural issues and on society. It's not just we'll have fewer glaciers.
Not going to be around to see the worst of it. I've often thought that human beings struggle with time scales. Because to the human population, especially when we talk policy, long term is 10 years. Mm-hmm. 20 is forever. But in climatological scales, it's nothing. So I've wondered if this will be the one problem that humans don't solve because we don't think well on time scales. So
it's possible.
So that anecdote you're sharing does not make me feel better. All right, Hammer of Sunlight, make me feel better a little bit here today. but honestly, when people share doubt with you, what does it sound like, and what's that conversation like?
I guess for me and Liam, because we both go to Brighton, it's a kind of a different community. We have a different circle of people. But I think it's the people that I've encountered more, it's like, oh, it's such a really big issue. Again, I'm one individual in a world of over 7 billion. What can I do to solve this crisis? It's not really terms of apathy, but in terms of like, it doesn't matter what I do because the world's going to keep spinning and carbon emissions are continuing to be increasing. So how am I going to be able to stop this machine that continues to chug on and on?
Hmm. Okay. And you disabuse them of that notion?
Try to the best of my ability. Yeah. Trying to point them to the next climate club meeting biweekly.
Yeah.
Next meeting is this Wednesday, right after school. This semester.
You're here to proselytize, man. Liam, what about you? What do you encounter?
Pretty much the same as what they've said, especially in school. I mean, they teach climate science and earth science and biology now. So there's really no one who's saying that climate change isn't human caused, at least in our schools. But there are definitely people who think, oh, we can't do anything about it, or, oh, we can't do anything without regulating the economy in a detrimental way. And so those are the conversations I think we need to have, is mm-hmm. what policy would we implement and what would the effects be?
That's an important point. And that's really where the debate is. We have now moved into a place, that's why certain phone calls I don't take anymore, because the debate is about what the policy needs to be. I mean, we understand the science, and science we learn more as time goes. I mean, it's not a fixed thing, but we generally understand the science, and it's a debate about what the policy needs to be, can be, sustainably might be. That's where the debate is, and that's interesting that even on the student level, mm-hmm. that's what you're hearing, doubt or concern there. One more quick point. One of our listeners said that just in terms of consumption of resources, this listener is saying that organized religion tends to be against contraception, and that there's many different barriers in our society to helping prevent resource consumption. Wants to know if the panel thinks organized religion is a detriment in the battle against climate change. Briefly.
No, I don't think it is. At least locally, I've worked with several faith leaders of faith in the community. And I mean, the way that they'll say is that, you know, they're doing the work of God of trying to protect our future. And there was actually, I mean, I might not be being brief, but there was a Rochester area interfaith climate action event last Sunday where they planted trees at four areas of worship. So at least locally, I can say the faith community is doing its job.
Okay, Radesh?
I 100% echo Liam's sentiments. Faith communities, especially in the Rochester area, have been on the front line in trying to fight climate change, saying obviously it's God's work to do so. I think most faith faiths believe in trying to be stewards of the world and keeping their part in trying to better themselves and better the world around them. So I totally agree that faith communities do support the climate crisis in terms of addressing it.
Okay, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm with Liam and Rudesh on this. It kind of, organized religion tends to build a sense of morality. You can be atheist or agnostic, or you can be religious, but it does really build like a moral code with people and, you know, acting in the best interest of the people, solving climate change, that's really a moral issue. So,
okay, by 2030, are we going to be much closer, or are we going to get to the benchmark scientists set? Right now, do you believe it, Lindsay? Yes or no, as we close the program?
I do not believe it, but I think we can get there. Okay, we just have to do it better.
I know where you are, Liam, right now.
I sure as hell think we'll be closer.
Okay.
I don't think we'll be there, though.
Rudesh.
Optimistic, yes, but hopefully there needs to be a lot more work to be done.
Okay. So, do they make you more optimistic, Terry?
Yeah, totally. The group, what I see most about students is that in every area we went to, they went straight up to the front. They sat to the front. They made contact. They chased undersecretaries out of the room to ask their questions. They worked their way up to the front of the stage. This is a generation that is seizing what they need to in order to get things done.
Thanks for being here. Terry Smith, Lindsay Cody, Rudesh Singh, Liam Smith, among many who participated in these events around the world. Let's talk again. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Puttup behind the glass helping out. Megan Mack producing and engineering. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.